It is Christmas Day in the year 800 AD. The great king of all the Franks, Charlemagne, quietly enters the Basilica of St. Peter in Rome and takes his spot at the front of the church. While kneeled in prayer, the presence of Pope Leo III is made known, along with the grand crown that he is carrying. In a rushed coronation ceremony, Charlemagne would be declared on the spot as the Emperor of the Romans, crowned by God himself. This news would quickly be proclaimed to the gathering crowds outside, who cheered for their new emperor in Augustus. This is the story we are told, and while the facts of how it went down are perhaps dubious, it will tell us a lot about how inner Europe will answer the question of empire, which had been left lingering ever since the decline of the Byzantines. Could Rome really be restored in the West, and by Germanic Franks no less? Why did the Pope seemingly need to surprise Charlemagne, and what does this move really indicate? In this fourth series of the podcast, we will look at the period between the rise of Charlemagne's new Roman Empire and its seeming collapse by the start of the 10th century, going through what made this period so remarkable, how it would define medieval culture within inner Europe, and how the various groups circling the Frankish orbit, both within and outside of the empire, would adapt. But first, let us introduce the conflict of this series, that being the question of empire. The Roman Empire, as we have firmly covered, collapsed in the West after the dissolution of its centralized bureaucracy and economic system. Most organized groups within its borders believed they were better off being independent, and perhaps they were. However, as we know through the survival of the church and the transfer of elites from the Roman system to the ecclesiastical system, while Rome, the political entity, was gone, Rome, the idea, would remain. Rome would still be that which no greater state exists on earth, the very concept of civilization itself, even if it had already been formally rejected by those settlers of the land it once claimed. Over centuries, the idea of Rome would become more and more detached from its actual state institutions, and more closely aligned with what would become the concept of Christendom. The people of Europe would become more self-consciously Christian over the course of the First Dark Age, and begin to notice how this belief system set them apart from those of other belief systems around them. As ever with cultural formation, a large aspect of this was the introduction and threat of outside groups, which could help to define who was and was not a part of this new identity. The Carolingians, through their military dominance and successful adaptation of the political formula, would expand Frankish control to encompass the majority of the plateau, all of former Roman Gaul, and de facto control over a vast amount of Italy. Due to the incursions of the Avars and Slavs into Carpathia, and the incursions of Arab pirates into the Mediterranean, along with Byzantine controversies surrounding iconoclasm, this Frankish island would be increasingly cut off from Byzantium, the only other significant Christian civilization at the time. Meanwhile, beginning especially in the 9th century, the Franks would be surrounded by non-Christians on all sides, with these groups consistently threatening to make their presence more well known. In Iberia was the Emirate of Cordoba, a powerful Islamic state making up the remnants of the great Umayyad Caliphate. Pushing into Sicily, and eventually Italy itself, would be the Aghlabid Arabs, acting on behalf of the mighty Islamic Abbasid Caliphate. To the east were the seemingly schismatic Byzantines, separated by an imposing wall of pagan Slavs and peoples of the steppe, which extended along Frankish borders all the way from the Alps to the Elbe River west of the Riverlands. To the north were pagan Germanics, most notably the Saxons in modern North Germany, who would be one of the greatest enemies of Charlemagne. Besides them, though, were the rising pagan Germanic tribes of Scandinavia, known as the Vikings, who would be angered by Charlemagne's conquest of the Saxons, and increasingly launch raids all across Frankish territory and into the struggling Anglo-Saxon and Celtic realms of the British Isles. So, surrounded on all sides, would be the precious light of Christianity, now almost fully united by the Carolingians. From this would be the concept of Christendom, taking over from the cornered worldview of the Romans. And who could lead this new identity against the overwhelming forces closing in around them? Well, there were no better examples to be found than those in the Bible and those who adopted Christianity before. From the church, Charlemagne and his successors would assume the roles and responsibilities of the Old Testament kings of Israel, leading their small people against the powerful yet fading forces around them, while steering their morality from within, guiding them away from idolatry and forgetfulness. They would have to be wise, responsible, and strong warriors, building an ark that could weather the storm around them. From the Romans, they would have the example of Constantine the Great, embracing the faith through fully adopting and revitalizing the church, through direct reform if necessary. As Constantine was the most powerful figure in the known world, he would naturally assume the role of protector of all Christians. The Franks would also have the contemporary example of the Byzantine Empire, whom the Pope was still well connected with. The Byzantines would emerge from their reorganization with the vision of the emperor as God's vice-regent on earth, imbued with the special capabilities and holy responsibilities to both uphold his laws among the people and to protect the church apparatus. All of this would lead to a massive surge of legitimacy for Charlemagne himself, who in this series will begin what is known as the Carolingian Renaissance. The Renaissance will be a flowering of culture brought about by Charlemagne's patronage of culture from all across Christendom, done in an effort to establish a new uniformity based on combining old Roman values with those developed over the past few centuries. It will also allow Charlemagne to assist in the ongoing reform efforts of the Catholic Church, first initiated by Saint Bonifaci in the mid-8th century, also a topic we will cover in this series. Despite all of these developments, however, we return to the issue at hand, that being the question of empire. Was the Frankish realm really comparable to the Old Testament kingdom of Israel? Was Christendom as united as Charlemagne and the Pope had hoped? Would the political formula and burgeoning aristocracy be able to transition into a Byzantine system of administration? The answer to all of these questions, as we will see, will be a resounding no. The Rome of old truly was gone. The ancestors of the new citizens of Christendom had already settled that in its stagnation and overbearing nature, it wasn't worth saving. The struggles of the Dark Ages and the continuous effort to found a new political formula, incorporating an entirely new way of organizing local administration, had really, truly built something new. And this something new will be what shines through the Middle Ages. That being said, the process of formation was still not complete, and the actions of individuals such as Charlemagne will have a huge effect on the development of culture, the medieval aristocracy, the Catholic Church, and the states of inner Europe, going into the future of our stories. All this, even if it wasn't necessarily the full rebirth first imagined by the Carolingians. I hope you'll join me next time, as we cover the rule of Charlemagne and the life brought about by the Carolingian Renaissance he would heavily encourage. Until then, this has been Jacob, and I thank you for listening to Between the Seas. I hope you can take the time today to look into your own local cultures.